Here we go. All right. Welcome to episode 54 of Bobbycast, in with Dirk Spentley.
What happened to my theme song? Bobby Bones from the radio, he's got himself.
No, that was for a TV show. That's a whole different thing. We still have that. Okay, no, good, it's still out there.
All right, when
it's
I first started your podcast, I was like, where's my
but that was, theme song? Dirk's wrote a song for a TV pilot that we're still in the middle of. And so I was like, hey, do it. And so you made a song, but it still exists.
Okay.
Just nobody's heard it yet because we're on lockdown with that thing until July. Because you have to sign a contract where nobody can see or hear anything until July.
That was fun. It was me and some of the guys of the band, Dan Holkalter, and our fiddle player, we all kind of came up with a little theme song for you. But hopefully I'll hear that one day.
I was talking to someone that, Sarah at CMA.
Mm.
And she was talking about how you guys used to work at Nashville Network together.
Yeah.
So this is what we were just talking before, my stand-up show on Saturday night.
Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah. And she was like, hey, cause she was like, is Dirk's coming? And I was like, no, I think Dirk's on the road. I guess everybody assumes if I'm in town, you're going to come to the show.
Mm-hmm.
She was just like, hey, is Dirk's coming? And I was like, he is not.
I would have been there.
He is not coming. He's on the road. And she said, you know, Dirk's used to, I knew you used to work at Nashville Network, but she was like, you know, he used to leave CDs on everybody's chairs all the time. Like he would leave and he would just leave music on everybody's chairs so we would all have it and hear it.
Hustling.
Was that to get people to actually hear the music or was that because you liked them as friends and you wanted them to hear your music?
No, that was me trying to get it, you know, just opening every door possible. And I definitely wanted them to hear it, but I was trying to get something going and not really in a desperate way. Just like, you know, I was working on music and, you know, Sarah, anyone I thought could like be of help, like, you know, of hearing that and help me maybe put it in someone's hands or get a kick down a door was the point. But I can't believe she remembers that. Yeah, we worked at TNN. The building's gone where we used to work. It was across the street from the Opry House, and it was when TNN and CMT were kind of all packed together, and I was just doing anything I could at that point. You know, I was recording songs. I was playing downtown on Lower Broadway. I was writing at ASCAP in the little writer's room they have upstairs where they allow anyone to write in. So it's just kind of a thing of just a shotgun blast of putting as much stuff out there and seeing what would stick. And I'm sorry about my voice, by the way. But I just did 3 shows in a row and traveled back today from South Dakota, and my voice is a little fried.
Do you, when you travel, you always fly back? You always fly your own plane back?
I always fly the band, and I always fly
I don't know what your thing is with flying. There's some it's one of two things. Because I don't understand the flying thing with you. And so much so, and I think you're probably a good pilot.
I'm good.
I mean, you have to be, right?
Yeah,
They also call them, those little planes, like, you know, lawyer killers. Because you get just good enough, and then get up there.
Yeah, it's, man, the flying thing is so, it's, you know, it's a whole other show, but it is, you know, it's a manifestation. That's something that I put out there a long time ago, and I think that's one thing you and I share in common is manifesting our realities, and it starts with small things. It started off me just when I was 19 wanting to get my pilot's license, and it took me 3 years to get it.
Why'd you want to get a pilot's license?
I just wanted to fly. I just had that, when I was a kid, I made model airplanes. I just wanted to fly, and it took me 3 years just because it took time and money to do it. I got my pilot's license, and then I just stopped flying because I didn't really have a mission. And then I flew with Kenny Chesney one time coming back from a show in a private jet, my first time ever in a jet. I was like, this is unbelievable. It was back in 2003. It was me, Keith, and Kenny in a plane. It was awesome. I was like, whoa, this is what I want, you know? And so I've done this with a couple things. I made my password on my computer. When we landed, we went to like a different terminal, right, where jets go. And it was a place called Signature. It was like a, that's what it's like a, the little general aviation plane for a place for jets. And I made Signature my password in my computer. And so every time I had to get on my computer, I had to type the word Signature. And I was like, I want to own a jet. And, you know, my career kind of stalled out around 2008. And that dream, I was like, you know, that's never going to happen. I'm never going to own a jet. It's cool. But, you know, that dream kind of went away. And I was playing a gig somewhere with Halfway to Hazard of all people. And a little plane flew overhead. And these guys, like, I always look up the planes, and these guys go, yeah, that's Tim McGraw. He's Tim's up there flying that plane to the gig today. It was a charity gig we were doing. I was like, Tim McGraw has his own cologne. He's not flying around in a little six-cylinder prop plane by himself, you know. And sure enough, it was Tim McGraw, and he's like, yeah, I'm getting my pilot's license, and he was flying this cool plane. And
I mean, getting my pilot's license, and he was flying the plane?
Well, he was with an instructor, flying to a gig, you know, right. Multitasking. And so I went out the next day and started flying with that instructor, and I just fell back in love with flying again. And I had a kid at this point, too. Evie was born, so I was looking for ways to kind of cut the corners off some of my travel. At this point, I was flying Southwest all the time. And so I started flying that small plane nonstop because of McGraw, and I put about 500-700 hours in that plane flying everywhere. And long story short, how things, you put them out there in the universe, they come back to you. I was flying out of O'Hare. I flew a commercial plane into O'Hare, went around to the other side of the airport, and jumped in my plane, my little prop plane that someone had met me with to fly to a gig in a small town. And I was using the bathroom at the urinal, and I looked up, and the word signature was above the urinal. And I was like, oh my God. Like, it totally worked out in a way I wasn't expecting. I thought I was going to be in the back of a jet. You know, that was my what I was manifesting, hoping to manifest. Ended up being in the front left seat of a prop plane, which was way cooler. I'd rather be the pilot than a passenger. And it's crazy you put things out there like that and they come around. And now, and it continued to evolve. I've met the guys at Cessna and became friends with the guy that runs the company, and I'm flying a little bit different plane now that I can actually hold all the guys in my band that are, they're all brave enough to fly with me. And I have another pilot that flies with us too. So there's two of us up front.
The plane's just small. Because we were together in Vegas and you were like, yeah, hey, we're leaving at 4 p.m. tomorrow if you want to fly. I was like, dude, I appreciate the offer, but I don't want to get in a small plane like that. Like, I don't feel comfortable.
Yeah, if you flew, you know, for me and the guys of the band, it's, you know, it's, we have kids, and it's just like, I remember the first time I took a guitar player with me, our old guitar player, Brian Lason, he's like, I'll go up with you one time when it's perfectly clear and we don't go a mile from the airport. I was like, all right, we'll see about that. I flew him home one night from a gig, so he got to be home at, you know, midnight instead of getting home the next day on the bus at like 10 a.m., I called him Velcro because I could not get him out of the seat. He was stuck to that seat. Every time I was flying in ice, rain, snow, he was always like first one wanting to go because it's a time machine. If you got kids in this business, you have to be two places at once.
It's definitely just, and maybe not even that plane, but you know, sometimes work, if they're somewhere I have to get quick, they'll send a plane.
Yeah.
And they'll go, hey, we need you New York to Los Angeles, and then we need you back in New York. So yeah, they'll send their plane and I'll just get shipped around.
Yeah.
It's a game. It's a change. Like,
it is, and it's a total luxury, and it's crazy even talking about it, but it is for me. I want to be as successful as a dad as I am, as I feel like as I've been as a singer, entertainer, and to do that, you have to be present. You have to be there. You can't talk about it. You have to be there for the, you know, make the breakfast. You got to be there to go to the games. You got to be there to do all the little things, the tiny things, the dumb things. And
it's a lot of math, though, right? Are you doing math all the time up there, or not really? I've just seen you up on a calculator the whole time, and I'm going, God,
no,
they're just trying to do
trigonometry. I mean, luckily, my buddy Austin, who I fly with, is such a help. I mean, it's, when you got a two-man crew, it really helps out a lot. But we've got a great product. You can fly a Cessna plane, and it's really reliable, great people, and the great service. And it is just, it makes, it, and I fly the whole band with me, too. Those guys go with me everywhere. And so when we walk on stage, they're in a great mood because their families are happy. Their wives are in good spirits. They've been with their kids that morning. We hit the stage. It makes for a better show. I mean, it's a win-win for us, for our fans, and obviously for our kids. So it's kind of, at this point of my career, it's one has, you know, they go hand in hand.
How do you do your band? Because, so I have our little stupid band.
Yeah.
And I have a couple people that I keep on all the time. Mm-hmm. My drummer, my bassist. They're just my drummer, my bassist.
Yeah, cool.
But everybody else kind of trickles in and out, and I pay them, you know, they have to get paid differently because yeah, some do some shows. Is your whole band like on a retainer? Like, do you pay them a salary?
Yeah.
So they're like your people.
Yeah. I've always been a band guy. When I was playing down Lower Broadway, I just liked being in the band. You know, I had a list of like, you know, 100 guys I've met over the years of being down there. If I needed a steel player, I'd call Rusty Danmeyer. If I needed an upright bass player, I'd call this guy. You know, so I've always loved musicians. They're my favorite people. They're just, to be a great musician, you have to learn from all the people before you. So it really humbles you to a degree. You know, you don't think you're the greatest guy ever because you have to study all the people that came before you to get good. So they're just great people. They're fun to be around. They don't have egos.
But and you pay them, they get a paycheck, the guys in the band, from like your company.
Yeah, so I was saying the greatest thing, when you actually get a band, you go from paying them day rates, when you can actually put them on salary. It's like the best feeling because it's a big deal for them to be on salary. And so, yeah, they get a paid salary throughout the whole year, whether we're touring or not. It's awesome.
If they came to you and said, hey, Dirks, listen, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go over to Urban.
No one's leaving my band.
Because they just enjoy the vibe?
Because they love, we have a great vibe together. We're super close. We're as close as probably your morning show is. And they get paid really well, and they fly everywhere with me to every gig when I fly a lot. So their
lifestyle, you give them the lifestyle that makes them want to stay.
There's no gig out there that anyone in my band would ever take. You could toss the greatest rock band out there, they would never take that gig. I treat them like those guys are my, that is all my dude time. That's all my bro time, is with the guys of the band. Those are who I do all my stuff with. That's when I come home, I'm like, I don't need to see any other males. I'm good. I've been with my guys all weekend. We had a great time. We went and saw Mount Rushmore. We went hiking. We played video games. We were going through this shared experience together. When I walk on stage, that's like a, you know, I have a lot of other friends, but with these guys, we have a shared experience of going out there every day and having to, you know, run this marathon and crack this rock and break it up into little pieces over and over again and find ways to do it where it makes it fun for us continually. It's kind of like a therapy session in a way, if you really are trying to do it in an honest and sincere way, the live show, that is, and not just put on a show, but go through an experience with your fans and with your fellow bandmates. I really approach it that way. Obviously, it's my deal, but I approach it as a band, from the way we interact on stage to even where their mics are placed on stage, you know, up near mine, not way in the back. You know, it's more like a level, you know, think of Pearl Jam. I try to keep it up tight and close like that.
So if you're away doing dude stuff, is there any resentment from your wife because she's at home with the kids and she's like, you get to go and do dude stuff? I know you're working, but still, yeah, you're doing dude fun stuff. And then you come home and she's been with the kids.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I won't say resentment, but I have to be honest about it and transparent about it, because I am doing my job. This is what I do, but I love what I do. I mean, I love, there's nothing like being on stage with your guys and your fans. And I get to do stuff, you know, there's work, but yeah, like I went hiking yesterday in the Black Hills, in the mountains outside of Rapid City, South Dakota. And I was in Billings, Montana 2 days ago, hiking through just beautiful, mountains around there, or hills around there. And I just tell her this stuff. I'm not trying to hide it from her. I'm like, I know it's raining all weekend in Nashville, and here I am like in like 75 degree weather in like Montana, probably one of my favorite states in the whole country. And so when I come home, I'm ready for battle, man. I'm ready to like help out any way I possibly can. I wake up every morning at 4:44 so I can go get my workout in, be done by 6, and be home like ready to be fully engaged in like the drama of having 3 kids and 3 dogs and all the work that goes into trying to make that house, you know, run great and everyone have great days. So I owe her a lot. But if I ever were to win an award, the only reason I would love to win one was, if Keith Urban and I ever do win an award, I'd want to go up there just to thank her, because it's incredible, man. It's hard, man. All moms out there, any parent, that's the hardest gig, man. I know how hard you work. It's insane. Your work ethic. And I work really hard too, but I think when you have kids, like, it's a whole nother level, because there's such a responsibility there. I mean, you're basically growing this creature and your input is so important, and you don't ever get a break. I mean, it's 24/7. You don't even sleep, because someone's having a nightmare. Someone might have peed the bed. You know, you hear a sound, dogs barking. It's 24/7. It's so hard. So
unless you're gone for 3 days and it's like you get a vacation.
Oh, for me? Yeah. I'm not saying for me. I'm saying for her. No, for me, yeah. It's like I gotta, you know, it's kind of like pulling the ripcord when you get to go on the road. So you're out there and you can get stuff done, and you can choose to either, you know, party or work out, or, you know, there's a lot of freedoms with that. So, yeah, I just try to be really transparent with her and honest about what I'm doing, and she's super supportive at the same time. Yeah, it's tough not getting to get that break.
You mentioned a minute ago in 2008 when you said your career stalled.
Eight or nine.
Because right now we see you as the guy who has – you're now in the A – it's hard to get in the A group. You're in the A group. You're now in the A group. I think you're a recent addition.
Yeah.
Speaking frankly, you're a recent addition to the A group.
Yeah, I'm cool. B-plus, maybe.
You really are in the – I would tell you if you weren't.
B-plus-plus.
You're in the – 89%. You're in the A group. Like, you're in that mix of, is he going to be in the Entertainer of the Year category? Now, it's not he's for sure going to be nominated. Like, you know Luke is going to be nominated.
Yeah.
And probably going to win.
Yeah.
And he didn't win the ACM. Aldean did. But, like, you know Luke's going to – but you're in that – is he going to be in – and it's happened in the last couple of years – But you're like the consummate grinder.
Yeah, I've used that word a lot. It's like the hockey player that goes down there, and not the slap shot guy from out top, not the fancy forward that's getting the sweet goals, but the guy that goes down the corner and digs the pucks out. You know, that's when I play hockey here in town in my little league, the beer league. That's kind of my role in real life on that hockey team. And I think in my career, yeah, it's all about grinding. My favorite quote was written on a Calvin Coolidge quote, but it's about, you know, persistence and determination. It's, you know, education and talent and genius can't take the place of persistence and determination. That is the key to my success, for sure. And I know probably for yours as well. I mean, there's no reason why I should be a country singer or a pilot. But, you know, those are just things that I wanted to do. And if you work harder than anyone else, you got a better chance at making that happen.
What happened in 2008, 2009 in your mind that you took a step back?
You know, I went out on the road with, I play 1,000 dates on my own. I went out on the road with Kenny, and then I went out on the road towards Straight, and I went back on the road with Kenny, and that's usually the platform to jump off of. You know, that's where Urban, Flats, everyone went through Kenny back when we were starting off. If you got the Kenny gig, boom, you were a couple years from there, you'd be headlining on your own. And, you know, we were really looking like a 2008, we'd be bringing out some video, and it's going to be this kind of groundswell. And really, it's just the songs weren't there. That's what it comes down to. I was writing pretty much all my own songs, working a lot with some friends of mine here in town, and it's not their fault either. It's nobody's fault. I'm so happy that things are where they are. But I think I discovered you can't tour. I think I was, in my mind, I was trying to make albums that would be jet fuel for touring. Like, how can this song lead to headlining? I need the song to help me get there. And that's just a terrible way to make records. And nothing against those records. Those records still sound like some of my favorite sounding records. But as far as singles go and songs that are going to move the needle and really, I feel like I just needed to reset. You can only work so hard, man. I was working so hard on the road, touring nonstop. Jumping off stage. I'm stage diving. I'm pulling fans up. I'm just, you know, known as the hardest working man in country music. We did like 41 shows in 45 days one time. I mean, I'm out there all the time, and then I'm trying to rush back here and make records and then go back out there again. It just doesn't work that way. So I was on the road 2008 or 9 with Paisley, and so I tried my headlining thing. It just wasn't working. So I was like, okay, retreat. Brad was, I had a chance to go out with Brad, and I was on that tour, and I was opening for him, and there's just a lot going on that tour. We weren't really getting a chance to sound check. And it was just the vibe of my band just crashed. It was kind of the tour that just everyone just like, you know, we're just only playing for 45 minutes. And it's just the songs weren't really there. And I just was like in the back of my bus one day. And I remember thinking, I'm going to make a bluegrass record. I'm going to make a bluegrass record and a country record. And just, I need to get creative. That's what I kept thinking, is I need to get creative, because when you're in that opening slot, especially after you've headlined for a little while, it's tough to go back and just do 45 minutes of the same show every night. You know, you're trying to make the most of that 45 minutes, so you kind of get locked into doing the same show, and it just killed all of us. So I left and ended up making just a bluegrass record, and I went back in the process of making that, being off the grid, and not worrying about singles or touring or anything, just trying to make a great record that stood alone by itself and existed just for itself, totally rechanged my thinking. And, I started looking around people like Miranda Lambert, and, you know, she only writes half her album, if even that, you know, and Lady A and these people at the time were like, you know, they're collecting great songs. You know, they came to realize that after your second album, you can't write an entire album. There's no time. You're touring all the time. You still have so many other responsibilities. I was married at this point with kids too. So the bluegrass record, you know, I was working with a guy named John Randall, one of my best friends, and he was bringing me great songs from Christofferson and Buddy Miller, and just we started making a collection of an album that had my input, but also had songs that kind of rounded out what I was trying to say or the feel of the album. And I carried that on with working with Ross Copperman into the next couple albums, and really trying to make albums that. Don't worry about touring. Don't worry about anything. Who cares? Just make a great record. And one of the great things now, I don't know about A-lister, but where I am in my career is the better off you are at doing touring, and the more of you have those fans, the more freedom you have to say, who cares? Let's make the record you really want to make. I feel like that's why Keith is making like his best records. Keith Urban's records to me just get better and better each time, because I feel like he's even more like, I don't care. I'm going to make great music that makes me happy, that I like, and hopefully you like it too. But there's no math behind it, you know. It's just totally, it's pure art. He didn't have to worry about where he's going to get his next meal, you know. He's just making great records, and I feel like there's on both ends of the spectrum. When you're first starting off and you're so hungry, and then when you get to a place where you have a little bit of success and you have that freedom that it brings you, you can really make your best records. And I feel like that's what's happening now. I'm not sure that I answered your question, but
yeah, you and Keith get along pretty well.
I love him, man.
Me too, right?
It's hard for me to be friends with him, because I just have so much respect for him. It's like, we're good friends. But at the same time, I'm like, you're Keith Urban.
It's almost like, why do you... This is the feeling I have with him. Because him and I are closer than him and than me and other artists.
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of the guys that I like, and we'll talk to off the show. But it's like, I was like, why do you want to be friends with me? Like, you're so smart.
Yeah,
and
he
you're
is.
So talented, and you're so rich. Like, everything about you is way better than... Why would you want to be friends with me? That's how I feel with him.
He is, for me, he's like a... He's like a beacon. He's someone I look up to for advice on... just for lifestyle and management and how you approach things. And he's just... He's so present, which is something I always... You know, that's my main thing with anything I do is trying to be as present as possible in the moment that I'm in. And he really is a true reflection of that. I mean, when you speak to him, when you talk to him, he's so focused on what you have to say. He's listening. And it's very uncommon in this business full of, you know, singers and people are trying to look at me and you know, are have like 5 seconds to look in your eyes and they're kind of thinking about the next thing. He's just really focused and present and has great advice. And he's been through a lot, so he can offer a good... good gyms. But whenever I see him, it's usually on a Sunday, and we're doing something with our kids or something, and I'm like coming off the road, I'm just beat up, my brain, his brain's already functioning faster than mine anyway, I'm coming off like no sleep, I'm tired, I'm trying to make conversation with him. I'm like, hopefully I see you one day and I'm not like just pure, so exhausted, because it'd be fun to talk, like have an actual real conversation.
All right, take a drink of water here. Talk about 1-800-Flowers for a second. When you do one of these shows, you'll have to
learn. I've used them.
You have used
I've used 1-800-Flowers.
1-800-Flowers is giving our listeners right now an exclusive 36 for 36 offer. 36 sorbet roses for $36. It's $1 per rose. So you just pick your delivery date, and 1-800-Flowers will handle the rest, because Mother's Day is coming up, and there's like your mom, your aunt, your mother-in-law, your...
Girlfriend?
No, because she's not a mom of a kid.
Oh, yeah. Mother's Day, gotcha.
Yeah, Mother's Day.
I was trying to catch you there.
No.
Slip up on
stunning
something.
Stunning sorbet rose is the perfect way to surprise all the moms in your life, your wife, all those people. Refreshing mix of all those colors, like pastels. 100 flowers are picked at their peak and shipped overnight to ensure freshness. 36 sorbet roses for $36, but it expires on Friday if you hear this right now. The 1-800-Flowers 100% smile guarantee, so call 1-800-Flowers.com/bones, 1-800-Flowers.com/bones, and again, the offer ends Friday, 1-800-Flowers.com, and be sure to put bones in and get the deal. And again, Mother's Day, you don't want to miss Mother's Day for, you can even impress like your mother-in-law. So there's that. You have Mother's Day's coming up for you.
I know, I didn't realize that. I'm glad you did that commercial. That's great.
Your head starts spinning.
Yeah.
So speaking of Keith, did you watch Big Little Liars?
I need to. I know Ross loves it, man. He's freaking out about it. Every time we write, he's like, talks about it. And everyone's talking about that show. I've only seen like half the first episode, and it just...
So it hasn't hooked you yet?
No, I need to get into it.
It took me 2 episodes.
Yeah.
I've seen it all now.
I know. Don't tell me. I need to see it.
I wouldn't tell you.
You know what I'm just now watching? I'm just now watching Friday Night Lights, which is like 10 years old.
I've never seen Friday Night Lights.
It's so good.
But I'm so...
It takes me a while to get into things. Like, that's a 10-year-old show. I'm just now getting into it. But
I think I would love it.
Yeah.
But it's like there are so many new good
shows.
There's
so much out right now. I know. It's unbelievable. Well, we're good friends with Connie. She's like a good friend of ours. And my wife and Connie are great friends. And she's just one of my favorite people. And I always feel so bad that I hadn't really seen that show, because it's so good. And her acting in that is just unbelievable. But yeah, I need to check out Big Little Lies. It's incredible, right?
So, it's really good. But it's weird because, again, I've gotten to know Nicole a bit.
Yeah.
But it's weird to see her naked on TV. And so, I kind of feel weird. I feel like I should turn my head when I see her boob. Because I'm like...
she's an actress, bro. That's what they do, man. They're able to somehow... They're just... It's them. Their body's just a tool to use to project their art, man. They don't look at it like we do.
But again, I do. I feel that way.
Yeah.
And...
Shoot, man.
It's just the whole thing's weird for me.
Yeah. Well, I doubt it's weird for her, so don't...
What about it. Like, okay, so let's say a music video. You got another girl in the music video. That's not your wife.
It's weird for me.
Okay.
I'm not an actor, though.
I'm not talking about the acting part. Like, yeah. What about, like, the... When you
I'll tell you a funny... So, funny story. I had a song called Trying to Stop Your Leaving, and I did it with Trey Fanjoy, who's a great friend of ours, great video director, and we're shooting over in Chattanooga. And I just got married. My wife's on the bus, and I was in there for the first shoot. It's 5:30 in the morning in this like 2-story motel in the middle of outside of Chattanooga. And I'm in there. There's the girls in there, and Cassie comes in. I told her to bring some clothes in off the bus for me to wear, and she comes in, and Trey goes, "Oh no! This first scene is just gonna be boxers." And my new wife's like, "Okay," and she walks out and goes back in the bus, and Trey goes, "Dirks." And this girl, "Hi, nice to meet you. How you doing?" There's like 3 dudes around, like those kind of like porn cameras, you know, like, the, like just like the small silicone van, and like in this shady, like kind of pastel floral bedspread kind of motel place. Dirks, this isn't Come a Little Closer. This isn't Raining on Sunday. This is effing. All right? And she put on Led Zeppelin. Go. I'm with this girl. I just got married. She's like, you know, and Trey's like, oh, Dirk, okay, if you're not going to kiss her, will you lick his chest and lick it like up towards his neck? So like this girl's like licking me, and I'm just like, I'm not trying to do anything. And like, you know, because I got to go right back on the bus and tell my wife what just happened, you know. I can't, I'm going to lie about this. It's going to be on TV. I go back on the bus, and my wife's like, so how'd that go? I'm like, well, yeah, it was something. And I think it was one of the last videos I did where it's not like I'll do whatever it takes to help the song, not commercially, but just the story. You know, the song is all that matters in this town. It's all that matters to me. And there's a video that can help tell that story better. And I'll do whatever it takes. You know, I'll go anywhere, do anything. But I'm just not an actor. And
there's a hot ground. Like, you have to
Keith
did
too. If you look at Keith's videos, just recently did he start kind of going back into some acting stuff. For many, many, many years, Keith would just play guitar and let the actors do the acting, let the singer do the singing, and make a great story video, not try to do the whole thing. And I have a lot of respect for that. And it makes sense, because I'm not a very good actor.
If there's a hot girl licking your neck, mm-hmm. and you're in your boxers, like,
she's
how
wearing,
do you
and she's wearing like Band-Aids.
But how do you conceal your
pasties.
Boner?
You know what? Just mind control. Jedi mind control.
But I don't have it. Yeah. I want to have it.
I know. No, it's like, you just have to like,
grandma baseball, grandma baseball, yeah, toilets, yeah, toilets, like, toilets, grandma baseball.
It's total, just like, it's Jedi mind control. It's not going to happen. I can't let it happen.
I have some songs here.
Oh, man.
Let's play some of this stuff. How about this one right here?
But that crossed my mind a little too late. Cause I was thinking,
just give me your first thought that comes when you hear this stuff here.
Brett Beavers, great songwriter here in town. Really, without Brett, I wouldn't have anything. He really took me under his wing as a writer, and I learned so much from Brett about writing. And this was back when, like, when we had like the shoebox tape recorders, you know, and pen and paper. And he taught me how to write. One of the things he taught me was just to, you know, think out loud on paper. Don't talk the whole time when you're writing songs to somebody. Just to work on something when you get an idea, maybe. But and I remember playing that for Autumn House, who was an AR at a Capitol. I found her outside Exit Inn. I grabbed my guitar, ran out to her to Exit Inn. She came out of there. I sat her down on my tailgate, played her that song acoustically. I was going to the studio the next day, and she's like, cut that song. That's a great song.
So you run out to a prominent person here in town, say, hey, stop, and have her watch you sing a song.
She's an A&R. She still is over at Capitol Records. And she was in a club, I think, exiting and hearing, listening to somebody, and I texted her, I called her. And she met me outside, and I played it for her acoustically, like outside the club, and because I thought it could be a big hit. Oddly enough, I fought really hard for that not to be the first single. So,
what did you want to be the first
single? A song called "Wish It Would Break," which is more of a country thing. You know, it's about wishing your car stereo would break because every song plays reminds you of your girl. Wishing this picture frame would break that keeps falling down, but you don't have the heart to throw it away because it's a picture of the two of y'all. And the last verse is about wishing your heart would break so you just move on. It's a great song, and I wrote that with Brett. But Mike Dungan from Capitol was like, "We're going with what was I thinking?" So,
you're glad he did.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Come a little closer, baby.
Kenny Chesney. When I hear that song, it makes me think of Chesney. I wrote that with Brett Beavers, but Chesney said that was a song that, when he heard that come on the radio, that's the reason why he took me back out on the road with him again.
Do you remember, man, and you do so many, I hate when people do this to me too.
No.
But
I haven't heard that. I don't play that song live anymore, so I love hearing that. It's a great song.
You don't play, Yeah,
it's a little slow, but it's a great song.
And you say a little slow because you feel like it takes the crowd down.
You know. You gotta make a roller coaster out there when you're on. You gotta find a way to take people on a ride, and you can only have. You gotta pick your. You know, our show is so high energy, and that's. But what makes the show great is, and what makes those high energy songs work is the real moments, and that. And you can only have so many, and that song there's no room for that one right now.
All right, how about this one?
Let your wheels just turn down the road.
Oh man. Probably one of my favorite songs. Another song I don't do in the live show anymore, but I do it usually earlier in the night in the acoustic show. But when I think of that video, I think that song is the video for it because there's a scene where I'm getting rained on by a rain machine, but you can tell there's no other rain like anywhere else behind
me.
It's
like just coming on you.
Yeah.
It's like the cartoon whenever the big guy's having a bad day.
But it's such a great video. There's just that one moment because, you know, if you're you care so much about the work you do, you're like, ah, oh, that one scene drives me crazy. But Chris Hickey did that video. It's actually one of the best videos we ever did. And that song is, I love that song, man. It's one of my favorite songs. But I usually do it. I do a pre-show acoustic performance for some folks, and I usually am doing that song because it's a good one.
I went to watch John Mayer a couple weeks ago.
I know. How was that?
I was fantastic.
Speaking of boners, did you get one?
I did.
Did it move a little bit?
I had
it grew
one.
The whole time?
The whole day. Yeah. It wasn't growing.
I saw a picture of Mike. It moved a little
it
bit.
It was fully the whole time. Like it was like Viagra
yeah,
boner.
Yeah, what you do? Yeah.
And so I went. Now I don't know what point I was going to get to.
Wow, that's so funny, dude.
I genuinely had a point.
Yeah.
But
you went to see John Mayer, settle for a slowdown. It was moments.
I come back to it. Every mile, I have no idea where I was.
That's
like,
so
I
amazing.
Feel like I had a point.
You did. You did.
Who, I don't know. Tell me about this song. I'll get my thought back.
I wrote that song in Launch It Alone the same day with Brett Beavers and a guy named Steve Bogart. And, you know, it's a great song. I would say it's one of the songs that it could say more. I mean, if I was, it was a number one, but it wasn't like a, that was a lead single off an album, and it just really didn't do much. People still love that song. I still do it live, but I use that song for a lot of video content of like our life on the road. But that's a song that, if I'm being totally honest and critiquing myself, just didn't say enough. You know, the verses need to be more specific and more biting and more personal and more telling of who you are or the story you're trying to tell, and just not so interchangeable. So I love that song, but if I was listening to it, that's one thing. Every song you put out, I put out from this point on, has to be like say something really impactful, or you know, every line has to be just perfect.
I know what it is. I remember what it was.
Yeah.
So I went to John Mayer, and he had these packages that they sell, right? And it was like I didn't buy one of them. I'm lucky enough that I get to be. I get to go hang out.
Yeah.
And so, but it was like, if you're a super fan, you could pay like $800,
and you
could go walk backstage and get like a banana and touch John's. I don't know. What do you do?
Yeah. Is there a little tour where you get to see stuff?
Yes. There's a.
And childhood guitar and.
You pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars to do that, and then you meet them and whatever. Do you do that part of it where you're like pay? Because it is worth something to get the experience.
We do a thing where you pay extra $900, but you pay and you come back to the rooms. You get to come in before anybody else. There's beer and alcohol and some food. And
I've seen that room.
Yeah, and there's like a little photo booth.
You charge more.
Should I?
I saw people just paying money out the butt for Mayer.
You know, it's a tough thing. You want to keep your ticket prices as low as possible, and that's the whole thing. Like one of the things I stole from. Think about Garth Brooks is those low ticket prices, man. That's the coolest thing. Why you want to keep them low? But
that's not the ticket though. That's for the rich people.
But if you want to if I go to see U2 or something, if they offered like some sort of like backstage thing, I would want that because I'm a super fan, you know. I think for the fans that want it, it's a cool deal because we do a lot. I used to be just me by myself and guitar, but the guys in my band, they're sitting around. They're like, one guy Ben started playing with me on the guitar because he's like, I don't have anything to do. I'd love to go pick. And then Cassidy came out and started playing bass and a kick drum. And then Dan brought his fiddle. It's like a full show now. And we play like 40 minutes. It's like a really fun.
That's why your voice sucks on Monday because you're playing 6 shows in 3 days.
Yeah, we do a lot of like backstage just kind of playing as well. So it's kind of fried. But it's for them, it's really fun. It's what's cool about it. It's acoustic. It's plugged in, but it's acoustic. And I'm taking requests. We're telling jokes. I'm telling stories. And it's long. It's only supposed to be 15 minutes, but it ends up being like, sometimes 30, 40 minutes.
I know in the Nashville show you got really sick before the show. And
I did the acoustic thing that night, but it was a little bit of a stretch.
I'm not even going to say. I was just like, how do you do? Because I remember talking to you before the show, and you're like, I literally have an IV bag. You took a picture of the. You had water.
Yeah.
You were hooked up.
Yeah.
The needle in you.
I did an IV and I did a steroid at 12 and a steroid at 6. It's like your worst nightmare. Like, you just play Nashville, playing your hometown show, and it's like, to have no voice it makes me like get the heebie-jeebies just thinking about that moment. It ended up being a great night. It was so cathartic that actually when your voice starts working, you're like, wow, I'm going to make it. This is going to happen. But leading up to it, that whole day was terrible. But I was able to do the acoustic deal, and I just had to cancel some meet and greets and stuff.
Mike, how loud's the mower coming through the microphones? You can't hear. There's something. We're in my house.
I know.
And so it's. Am I listen, what would you do in this situation? That's what
great views up here, by the way.
Oh, the windows. Dude,
I love
can
it.
You see? Oh, yeah, you can't see.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the cool. It's the top floor, so it's cool.
Yeah.
So, but my neighbor, I'm going to tell you, what would you do in this situation? I don't know if you have neighbors. I used to, you know,
I got neighbors, bro. Okay. Yeah.
Come on. So, they have trash cans. Yeah. And they're, this neighbor, I live in a nice house, but this neighborhood is still growing.
Yeah.
So, it's all different kinds of houses.
Yeah.
And so, there's no HOA because it's not like a super great neighborhood.
No. I mean, I love where you live. So I, you know, you're just part of the gang over here.
Yes.
You're not secluded at all.
So I'm just part of the crew.
I thought there might be a gate or something.
There was one point, I had a gate at one point. When I moved here, they made me go to, and have a secured place in my contract because of, you know, just getting jumped.
Yeah.
So I lived there and I lived downtown and the place flooded. Let me get to my point here. My girlfriend was out and my neighbor comes over to the house and starts and knocks on the door. And Lindsay's here and she's like, yeah, hello. She goes, hey, your trash cans are, when it storms, they dump over. And so there's like cardboard, and we don't like that. So she was like, okay, great. So my girlfriend like gets bungee cables and straps them to the wood and like to whatever. So then my neighbor sends a note to her because she gives her, she's like, hey, if you need anything, here's my cell phone number.
Right there.
Okay. And so my neighbor sent the text to her going, hey, do you need a lawn service? And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
She texted.
No, the neighbor texted Lindsay.
No, we're good. Thanks.
What would you have done? Because my yard wasn't in the best shape, but it was just now lawn mowing time.
Dude, I would let that grow. I would just let it grow. What are you talking about, man?
I felt that way. She talked me out of it.
That would not sit well with me. Like, just you do you, I'll do me.
And my dog has to have a backyard too, so I thought about mowing like one little square for him and letting the rest grow up.
Yeah, you should.
But you know, everybody kind of leaves everybody alone over here.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Mike.
Is that a weird thing for you that people know where Dierks Bentley lives?
You know, I struggle with that a little bit, but it's all good. I mean, country music fans are so, we're lucky. You know,
not fans, neighbors.
Oh, no, we're pretty. I'm walking my dogs, and the kids are riding the street, and everyone's pretty cool about it. I mean, it's not a problem for me.
Anybody else famous live by you?
No.
Big Gate. I've never been over to your house.
No gate. People say I should get a gate, but I don't have a gate.
Hmm. Yep. Your kids old enough to have like go-karts?
I get the buses drive by a little bit and stuff like that.
Like the what buses?
No, it's country and western tour buses.
They come by your house and say that's where Dierks Bentley lives?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm out.
It used to be like 6-7 times a day.
I'm out.
Well, I don't think they can get around up here, but yeah, come by a little bit. You know, there those folks in there, it's all good people.
No, it is all good. 99.9%. Yeah. I like our listeners are the greatest, but it's when you get that 0.1% of person who.
I have a lot of security features, and I have guns as well too. I mean, I'm recording stuff.
I can't believe these things drive by your house.
They come by, you know.
Like I would call them at their work and be like, "Hey, listen,
no,
let's not do this."
There's a time you have those thoughts like I'm gonna put like nails in the road or something. But
No, I never had that thought. I never had the thought of putting nails in the road.
Well, I've gone dark before, but we're at a place in my life now. I'm like, it's all good, but you could go the other direction as well and do like what guys like Bud Pierce, big country singer in the 60s, he used to have buses stop at his house and sell him pool water. He would literally jar up like a little bar of his pool. And for $5, you can have some Bud Pierce pool water. So there's that, you know, if this doesn't work out for me, you know, maybe I'll start selling out some, I don't have a pool. I'll start selling grass clippings, speaking of yards. I love Blue Apron.
Oh, that's the next.
Dude, I use that all the time.
Are you lying?
I swear to God.
Yeah, I have a box because it comes like twice a week for
me. The big box. It's kind of a waste. Oh, I don't know.
Dierks is doing the Blue Apron. So, okay, I'll talk about Blue Apron.
I want to talk about Blue Apron.
Then I want to talk about you two for a second. Right, so, Blue Apron, you get it, honestly?
I honestly get Blue Apron.
What is Blue Apron?
I like some of the vegetarian options.
Yeah.
That's my wife's vegetarian. But it's just a food delivery service that comes in a box. It's cool and it has a bunch of, like, it's cold. Has ice packets in there and has a bunch of different like food options. They're pretty easy to make if you're not very good cook.
You do use Blue Apron. That's good. Yeah. Look at this guy over here. Dierks is like us.
I'm not a very good cook. I make mostly PB&J sandwiches and spaghetti, but Blue Apron, I'm actually able to follow the instructions and put together a pretty good meal.
It's like he's reading the page. So, listen, not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make the difference. And so Blue Apron's affordable, too. If you're on a budget like Dierks is, for less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes with pre-portioned ingredients. Like he says, and there's a card, too, that actually tells me how to make – without the card, I would make nothing.
Yeah.
I would know how to make nothing. And I can make these crazy meals if you're a vegetarian or I like some of the seafood stuff, too.
Yeah.
But The car tells you how to do it, and they deliver right now. Check out this week's menu. You get the first 3 meals for free with free shipping. BlueApron.com/Bobby. BlueApron.com/Bobby. And so, do you have to cook? Do you put the kids' lunches together ever?
My wife does lunches in the morning, or we tag team. It's a full on tag team session in the morning. So everyone's kind of doing a little bit of everything, but it seems like she usually makes the PB&J sandwiches.
Like, what's a Tuesday? Because everybody knows you as the guy that does the music, but what's a Tuesday like for you?
Get up at 4:44. Gives me 1 minute to, gives me 30 seconds to complain and talk about how I don't want to get up, and gives me 30 seconds to actually start thinking about the positives of how I feel after I work out. I go to the gym, do a group workout from 5 to 5:55.
You do a group workout?
Yeah.
Do people stare at you and go, "There's Dirk Bentley working
out"? No. No one cares. I mean, it's all good. Good. Everyone's there. People are working out at 5 o'clock in the morning. They don't care who I am. They're hardcore.
I don't know how you say that. Like, I went to a yoga class just now, and I was terrible, right? I'm terrible at yoga.
Right.
I had three people. I'm embarrassed because I'm not good at it. I had three people come up to me and be like, "Hey, Bobby, we're doing yoga." And I'm just humiliated because they watch me. They can't. Maybe you just don't know.
No, I don't. It's all just regular people, and no one really. Again, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. These people are not. They're there to work out. They're not really that interested in who else is there. And it's a really hard workout. It's freaking exhausting. I get home and hopefully everyone's still asleep because they need to be asleep. But my house always has gotten up so early, and we just try to get that morning time. Is kind of like some people have family dinner. For us, like, breakfast is like the time we're most together doing stuff and. Just trying to, it's a dance with the food and the dogs and just trying to make the morning great and get out the door in positive spirits and get those guys off to school. And then I come back and start working on stuff.
But what does that mean, working on stuff?
Writing songs. Right now I'm trying to work on another record. So I'm writing with, tomorrow I'm writing with Casey Beathard and Jaron Johnson. And just trying to catch up on life that I've missed from being on the road. So that's pretty much what Tuesday morning looks like, and trying to catch up with Cass too, doing stuff with her, just dumb stuff. I don't know, just running errands, going to get some more groceries or stuff. I don't know, taking someone's shoe to get fixed at the shoe store. Just stuff, man.
Will you write with somebody else for them at this point, or are you just writing for yourself?
I just write for myself. I don't think I'm enough writer to write for other people. I'd love to get a cut from somebody else, but I think, when I see someone else, right? When I see another artist's name on a song, my first thought is like, "How come this song wasn't good enough for you, but you're pitching it to me?" And second, I don't have the time, and I don't think if I'm writing with guys like John Knight and Ross Copperman every day, I'm sure I could get something cut by somebody else because those guys are on fire. But I just write for me.
I asked because I guess 3 or 4 days ago you texted me like, "Hey, let's write. Let's me and you and Ross write." And I was like, "What did I say?" You can test exactly what I said back to you. You said, "Hey, let's write." What was my response?
You said, "No, I'm not good enough," or something like that.
I said, "I don't deserve to have to sit and write with Dirks and Ross."
I only do anything. I only do stuff now at this point in my career that like interests me. It excites me. It's fun. And the idea of you, me, and Ross in a room writing would just be really fun because he's such a positive guy.
But there are so many awesome people in this town that you could write. Like, that's what I was like. I was like,
We could get something really great. We could get something really good.
But I don't deserve that.
It's not about deserve. Of course you deserve it. We don't deserve anything we're doing.
We deserve everything we're doing.
Well, we work for it and make it happen. And
this is our Jake moment. Ready to fight?
Oh, you know what I mean. You deserve to be that. Why would you not deserve to be in that room?
Because not to do that.
I mean, you're on stage by yourself doing comedy, which is probably sounds like the living, like, that sounds like hell to me. That sounds like my...
It doesn't sound like hell to you. You've said before you wanted to do it. And I was like, "Dude, come out.
I can never do that." I tell 2 or 3 jokes on stage and they usually bomb, and I usually say, "Okay, I'll get back to the singing. Thanks for listening." So, but I don't know. I don't think it's a matter of deserve. It's just a matter of, it'd be fun.
You say you're a U2 super fan. House, is that your favorite band?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is my favorite band.
What's your... I have a rule. Your favorite band, your favorite song from them can't be a huge radio song.
Oh, gosh. Peace on Earth.
No. I'm asking what's your favorite song. I should have told you the rule before I told you that.
I'll say for them probably a song called Peace on Earth.
Why?
God, it's just how... It's kind of a really morbid song, but it's just about how there's never really will be peace on Earth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got it all up here. I have whatever
That's my favorite record right there.
F- from all that you can't leave behind.
Yeah.
Let me get this on this computer. I got it going through Alexa right now. You have an Alexa?
Kite is so good too. Gosh, play Kite.
Well, hold on.
It's like a song for your kids.
Mike, what's happening over here? Wait, what button did I not push right? This computer.
It's playing a little bit.
Can you hear it? Oh, there it is. Is that Peace on Earth?
Yeah.
Wait, I mean, the volume's too low.
I mean,
there we go. Okay, we're good.
If I had to pick on that list right there, it'd probably be Kite.
This is a later U2 record, though. And this is your favorite, huh? Because I remember playing this on the radio.
Like, you hit me like, I have to go back and, I mean, if I could pull up.
I mean, this is so good.
Yeah, I think what I love about them is just their energy as a band. When you watch them play, it's like.
How many shows have you been to?
Not that many. I've been.
More than five?
I've probably been to four.
You met Bono?
Yeah, I have.
Really?
Yeah. He said my name at the Nashville show. I had dinner with him the night before. And,
wow.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Let's do this, because we do this on the show sometimes. Biggest name dropper story. Because I don't know if it gets bigger than Bono, so I'm gonna. That one does not count, because I'd like to hear more about that. But let's take Bono out of the mix.
Yeah.
Biggest name dropper story.
Gosh, man. I mean, I don't have that many famous, like.
No, the cool, you do. You have to. I have cool ones. I mean.
Give me, like, one of yours. Let me think about it for a second. Like.
Okay, I'll give you. As you think about it. So say, I went to, I don't care. I've talked about these. I went to Augusta with John Legend.
Yeah.
And we, you know, there were four of us.
Wow.
And it was me, Andy Roddick, John Legend, and another buddy. But we were there for 2 days hanging out, watching golf. And I've mentioned it because I don't like, but it's, that's a pretty cool, and we sat around the house for 2 days hanging out.
I had a glass of wine with Phil Mickelson one time
That's not that cool.
I know. Peyton Manning's a friend. Does that count?
That's cool. If he's a friend.
Peyton Manning's. I went fishing all day long with Peyton Manning up in northern Canada, British Columbia. We fished for like gigantic fish for half the day, so that'd be my biggest probably.
What's Manning like?
He's totally cool.
Yeah?
He's just like the guy on the Papa John's commercial, man. He's like laid back and funny and good stories and easy to be around. And
I had dinner with Eli once.
Yeah.
At Peyton's Super Bowl.
Which one?
In Miami. I went with Archie, Eli, and Cooper.
Yeah.
Because Peyton was playing.
Yeah.
And so we went and had dinner the night before.
Yeah.
And I just remember Eli being so big. And like, he doesn't look big on TV.
Is he big?
Those guys are monsters. Yeah. I mean, Peyton's a monster.
Peyton, I actually watched the very first game of the year last year with Peyton in a suite in Denver, and we were watching. It was
so you guys are real friends. Like you would call Peyton.
Yeah, I text with him a little bit. Yeah.
Do you still get nervous texting him?
No.
Like he's gonna judge you. Like your text has to be right on.
No. I do know. I know. Because
there are a couple people I feel like that with. I'm like,
right timing. Don't do it too often.
Make sure not too late.
And do you respond to their text?
Do you respond right back right away, or do you give it a second?
Or you respond knowing they're not going to respond back. That's okay because you're kind of inferior in this relationship.
That's a funny one though. Like, who do you have that relationship? Because I can tell you mine too. Like, who do you have that relationship with where it's like, I have their number.
Well,
and
certainly with him, with Bono, I texted him. I mean, I used to like. That's another one. Like I kind of manifested that meeting him because I used to like carry. I saw him play one time in all places in Hawaii. I finished.
Eddie went and saw Pearl Jam and you two together in Hawaii. Was it the same show or no?
I went to that show. Yeah. It was in 2007, and I had a CD in my back of my jeans because I was like, I know I'm gonna meet him tonight. I'm gonna pitch him this song. I want to get him to
wait, you wanted to pitch a song to Bono?
I wanted him to sing on my record, yeah. And I finally made that. There's a song on my last record called Here on Earth, and I sent it to him, and he wrote back, this is a, he's one of those guys that can just say, like, in three lines, every line is, like, so profound. It's, like, so well-written, and just he's on a different level. And I, of course, emailed back this long thing about, hey, we're coming to Ireland. Let's go to a pub and get some, all this stuff, beers and stuff. Yeah, I didn't get that response, but I think he's pretty busy. But I know what you're talking about. I'm trying to think of the
cue. Give me one more. Because it's like you have to look at the time on your clock.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. You figure, is he eating dinner with his family? Will a text bother his dinner with his family? Does he even want to hear from me?
I know, we were just talking about this at family supper on the road yesterday. But Steve Mismore, our drummer, he's like, I think I've kind of fangirled James Neal a little too much, who's the hockey player for the Preds. He's like, Yeah, I'm kind of like, I don't know him that well, and I keep texting him like, great game, great game. You're so awesome. And he's like, I think I got to back off a little bit. I was like, yeah, let me text him.
That's
like,
funny.
I texted him, and he wrote me back. But yeah, everyone is guilty of that too, a little bit, but I can't think of anyone
else. You got nobody else you're going to add to the list?
No. I'm trying to, man, I'm terrible at texting. I've been like on a, I've bought a flip phone. I love iPhones, and I love Apple, and we live for them, but I am like, that's why I was telling you how much I love your show. Like, this is such a great idea, this podcast, because I'm so good.
No, I hate it.
I've been like trying to do like one day a week where I'm just on my flip phone for the whole day, and it's so hard, but it's just like, I am so over, you know, it's a love-hate relationship with the technology, and even with texting. I text so many people, but like, that's not really... Is that really, I mean, we're keeping up, but is that really, I'd rather have an hour conversation with somebody and have like a real conversation.
But is it better than nothing? Because at the pace that you're going, people always go, oh, our phones are in the way, our phones are in the way. One of our phones are actually keeping us two people that we would never talk to.
It's true. But I do feel like, so I have kids now too, though. So I know there's guys out there in Silicon Valley, they're geniuses that spend their whole lives thinking about how could I make an 8-year-old completely addicted to this device? And these are smart, smart people working with unlimited funds and on their coding all the time. And my daughter gets on an iPad and is completely hooked to some game, and she's just an experiment to these people. Same with Instagram, the stuff they got going on where you try to keep the streak alive. You know, how many days in a row have you texted this, you know, whatever, Instagram this person? It's like, it's all geared towards, we grew up without this stuff, so our brains had a chance to function. But when you see it through your kids and how, it's just not right, man. So I have to lead by example. If I have my phone out, it just takes one or two times for your kid to go, Dad, you know, so sorry. You just feel like the worst person. So I don't even take that phone in the house. Like, I have a flip phone. My wife has the number. Mary has the number. And it's like, anyone needs me, and my wife, you know, they can get in touch with me. But the freedom is unbelievable. But yeah, as far as friends go, you know, I've been emailing more. I just, like, I am better off on email. I will write longer emails, just do it through that, because I got to sit down and not just constantly be just like, on that thing. It drives me crazy.
Do your kids do
that? I didn't mean to bring it today. I meant to bring my flip phone, but I forgot it.
They do in-app purchases, like where they buy the things inside the game, and then you get the bill, and you're like, whoa. No.
And they don't do iPad. They only get iPads on the weekends, and not that much. But they'll, everything has to come through me, so I'll have to approve whatever she gets. There's no buying anything. It's just these little games they buy. They get for free that these people out there are pumping, and then they want to buy all the stuff inside of it. We don't do any of that. But it's scary, man. I hate it. I hate it for kids, man. I wish they could grow up in a place.
We had the same thing. Our parents were thinking, us, like, look at these guys with their cordless phones.
Different.
But it's different. It's just like the music. And everybody's like, well, the music's different now.
But with a phone, man, the technology wasn't changing every day. Every single day they're doing software updates on your phone to make it more addictive. Every day. There's guys right now. You're not Bobby Bones. You're experimental 5, 6, 7, 2. This dude, they know exactly when you're buying your record.
And so is everybody that's streaming your music. They are streaming too. We're all looking at data from everything else and creating our own lives from...
I know, but man, I don't know. That's why I love this podcast. I feel like it's just so much better than being out the texting, man.
Did you listen to the Ross Copperman one?
The whole thing, yeah.
That dude's funny. I like that dude.
I love it. I learned more about Ross from your podcast than I've known Ross now since I cut Tippin' on back. I mean, I learned more from that interview. It's great. I mean, that's what I've been doing in my truck now, is just driving around listening to your podcast and telling about Tim Ferriss and some other people. It's like, I need to retool my brain, because it's bad, especially if you're a musician on the road. I mean, the damn iPhone, it's just like, you know, there's a funny Instagram hashtag called band members on phones. And it's just like, I took one the other day we were up at this beautiful landscape in the middle of, you know, South Dakota in the Black Hills, and taking a self-timer shot, and two of my guys are on their phone. It's like, dude, we look around for 1 second. But it's just, you know, you're eating dinner, catering, and just like...
But think of all the relationships you're keeping because of that.
Derek Jeter's dating Madonna. That's so cool. It's like, you know, I know stuff. I don't want to know about anybody else. I don't want to know what is going on. I want to know like what's happening to people that I care about. So, I don't know. I got my relationship with technology is really... It's something that has to be maintained all the time. And especially once you get kids, it really is like...
But that's a different story. I can't argue about the kids. I don't have any kids.
Yeah, you don't want them on it, dude. Especially girls. It's just, I don't think it's a fair medium for girls in general. All the dating apps and stuff. It's just...
Who else? Let's stay out of the format.
Yeah.
Because you get into a little mess here when you go, okay, who do you like? Who else do you listen to out of the format? So you love you two. Who else do you like?
I mean, Bruno Mars is, he's unbelievable.
Why is he unbelievable to you?
He just has more talent. I mean, for performance-wise, the guy just has, he's just so good. You know, the rest of us up there, as country singers up there on stage without our guitars and doing stuff, you know, I'm trying to feel the flow of a song. And he's just like, in his pinky, you know, just, he has more moves right there than the rest of us have. Like, this guy's got it, man. And his songs are so good, man.
There was a time he came and did our show 6 years ago or so, yeah. Right? And so, not
there. You were talking about that, yeah.
So he was awesome. Doing the bit where he could do any song, yeah. Period. He was like, name a song, and I was like, okay, Eye of the Tiger, and he plays Eye of the Tiger. He's like, what else?
So he's a jukebox.
Jukebox.
He is.
And he did Tina Turner. Yeah. And he was just nailing them, and I was like, dude, what's? He's like, well. Because he grew up in a family band.
Yeah.
He was like the youngest kid, and they were all his whole family, they were all a band. He was like, they were like Elvis impersonators. And so he had all the skill set.
Yeah.
And he's also super good and super smart. And he's like,
did he do the Disney school stuff? Did he go through that, like that?
No, I don't think he was one of the, no, I don't think he's one of those kids.
He wasn't, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a video of Bruno, if you Google Bruno Mars on the Bobby Bone Show.
Yeah.
He crushes. He did Michael Jackson. He did Billie Jean. He's like, and so he's playing with the guitar. He's like, oh, she was more like, and he's just crushing every song.
So good. He's just it. He's just got that thing, man.
And now he's a superstar.
He is a superstar. Man.
It's fun to watch. Like though, it's even fun to watch it now, here in the country world, to watch and actually like be a part of people's careers and see them go from. Just somebody who's getting a deal or somebody who doesn't have a deal yet. Like, you know, one of my first people here that I actually met, and she was just a kid. It was Kelsey.
Yeah, I know. I remember her being on your show singing an acoustic version of the Girl Crush or something. I don't know. Maybe, I don't.
Kid America, she was on the show every week.
Yeah.
I mean, she didn't even have a song, but I just remember talking to her, and she had a publishing deal. And it's been cool to watch some of these artists, like, grow, and she's, you know, got four number ones now.
She's awesome,
and
man.
It's like, it's like now she's a star. But you've been able to see so many. Who did you see early on where you're like, oh man, like I'm not even that, I wasn't that good when I started, and they're going to be a superstar.
I mean, all these guys. I feel like Thomas Rhett, you know, he just has like, man, I got my deal when I was 26, 27. I'm such a late bloomer. I didn't have anything really figured out. I mean, even when I got, you know, married and was just out there on the road and like trying to like grapple with like how to make these things all work. These guys make it look so effortlessly. I mean, Thomas and Lauren, and he's balancing. He's got it going on. I actually got him saying with him the other night when he played down here at Ascend. And
after the game, right? Like the Preds.
Yeah. And he's just got the shows tight. He's so good up there. He's just knows what he's doing, and his personal life as well is really like balanced, and it's integrated into his like his career. And he's got a lot. He's way further ahead than I was, like, mentally developed as far at that age. It's incredible.
Last year, he played iHeart Country Festival, and I'd seen him, because I don't get to see a lot of you guys on the road, because I'm also out on the road.
Yeah.
Or, like, I'm just tired, and it's like, what am I going to do, travel to New Hampshire to watch you guys play?
Yeah.
Like, I just watch you go over to the house. Like,
So
I don't get to see shows that often. And
that's not, that's like a televised kind of situation.
It is.
Yeah.
But he played a full set, and I hadn't seen TR in forever, right?
Yeah.
So I went up to him after the show, and I was like, dude, like, it was next level. He had grown so much and was so freaking good.
Yeah, he did, you know, I
it was like kids do the darndest things is what I told him. It was like that show. It was like, it's like I watched a kid just, like, grow up.
I was with him when he really was making this transfer, which he recently made with his music from Fear of Jesus and some of the, you know, kind of breaking away. We were on the road together, and he was talking about his new record, and he was talking about how he was nervous, man. I think he's about to have a nervous breakdown, because he really was going for a different sound and just trying different stuff. And a lot of people, you know, transferring away from kind of the thing he was doing, the Georgia Boy stuff, into this person he is now. And a lot of haters, you know, hating on him for the things he was going for. And I was always so supportive, because he really was going for, his goal is high. He's not going for he's competitive, and he wants to take down the top guys who are in his same, you know, league, and or his same crew. And he's like, luckily I got this one song that's a love song. I think it's the only thing that's going to save me on this album, because no one's going to like this album. It's going to be terrible, but I got this one song that's a love song, and we'll see how it goes. And it was, of course, Die Happy Man, and it's kind of changed everything for him. But he's dialing it in, man. It's fun to watch him, like, just keep getting it more and more figured out who he is and what he wants to do.
What was that for you? What was the song that you kind of switched it up for? You're like, oh boy, we're at a different playing field now.
Gosh, man, I think my career has been so different than anyone else's I know. It's just been so such a long, slow.
What comes to mind where you're like, I'll be able to eat?
Drunk on a plane changed a lot for me.
I'm getting drunk on a plane.
I mean, the biggest song, the song had a big, like, you know, thing. But the most important song of my whole career, and I say every night when I'm on stage, is As I Hold On. That's the song that, like, connects the most with, it's the most personal song for me. I wrote it right after my dad passed away. And for the audience, man, those, it's a song in the show where, like, we're having a party, everything's fun, it's awesome, we're all feeling connected because we're all having so much fun and throwing a party. And this song, I play it, just like, it glues us in a different direction. It's more just like this instead of this. It's like we just come together over the shared sentiment of holding on to things that mean something to you. That's the most important song.
Important, but not the one you felt flipped you. Like, oh boy, this is it. I remember the day Drunk on a Plane. Like, I heard it for the first time.
Yeah.
You brought it into the studio. It hadn't been played yet. Mm-mm. And you were like, I want you to hear the song. And I was like, this is a real song, Drunk on a Plane. I thought you were messing with me.
Yeah.
And
I almost didn't even put it on the record.
Really? Who makes that call then to put it on the record?
Just, you know, everyone I work with, there's such an open communication. If I, like, even the label with Mike and Cindy and everyone at Capitol, if I have doubts about something, they don't immediately jump on that and use that to promote their agenda. Everyone just is like, cool. And we all work out together and work with Mary, and we just kind of like, and Arturo, my executive producer, and Ross, and just, okay, let's put it on there, you know. And,
but then to make it a single, you're talking about, like, complete left to center.
I know. I remember I've had some people like, that song will never work, man. Rednecks don't fly. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it'll work either, but it's I'm a pilot, and I love, you know, at the time, it was having a few drinks, and I'm glad it was a huge song for me, for sure.
It was a monster.
Yeah.
I mean, and it flew up the charts.
Yeah, it was big.
I remember the day it came on the radio. We did a debut, like a world premiere of it, and it played all day long. And I won't say who it is, but I was like, man, this song's really good, right? Because I like things that are different.
Yeah.
I like taking big chances and hitting home runs more so than being consistent and just, you know, having that 300 batting average.
Yeah.
So it came, I was like, man, I love this song because this is unlike anything else.
Yeah.
And a radio guy, so it's a big radio guy. He was like, this song sucks.
Really?
He was like, this is never going to work.
Maybe
it's too weird.
Who knows?
No, it's not. He obviously, it wasn't right because, but like, I love this song. You know what song I loved of yours that didn't work for you was Bourbon in Kentucky.
Yeah.
With you and Casey. Loved that song.
I did too. That album cycle was so funny because I put out Bourbon, it didn't work, pulled it back, put out I Hold On, which probably, you know, was a huge song for me. Then Drunk on a Plane, which was obviously the biggest song off that album. But Bourbon, it was a great song that Hillary Lindsay wrote, and I love that song, and I had to call her up. She's down in Orange Beach. She had a few drinks, and I was like, hey. And she's like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, you're not going to believe this, but we're pulling that song. And she was, like, so confused. She's like, I thought the next time I heard from you would be, like, the number one party. I'm like, I've never had to pull a song for in my life, but it's the middle of summer, and I'm getting all this feedback that the song's too dark. And
that's why I loved it, though.
I know,
like,
me
so
too,
real.
Man. I know, I loved it, too. And, everyone around me is like, it's just not going to work. And you can either work it for 30 weeks and have it die in the 30s or make a change now. It was the first song off the record. And I hate that. It was a great tune. But, that's what happens sometimes.
What for you, because the artist will come in and say, hey, this is a song. Like, for example, I think, who was it? My American Kids. Like, Kenny cut it. A Little Big Town had it.
Yeah.
And Kenny cut it.
Yeah.
And so... No, Kenny had it. Wait, yeah, Little
American
Big Town had it.
Yeah,
Little Big Town had it.
Yeah.
Shane was telling the story. Okay, now it all starts to fit.
Yeah.
Shane had it.
It all runs through Shane.
He's on a flight. It all runs through Shane. He's on a flight with Kenny, and he plays a song for Kenny. Kenny's like, I gotta have the song.
Yeah.
But Shane's like, I'm too scared to tell him. Little Big Town's already cut it.
Yeah.
So he has to call. They have to call Little Big Town. Kenny called and said, like, I would love to have the song. And Shane's like, oh, and Kenny's like, I want to make this the single.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, it's up to you guys. It's your song. You've already started paying. You're tracking it. And so Little Big Town gave the song American Kids to Kenny.
Yeah.
So a lot of people came up with stories like, man, I had this song. And then I was like, yeah, last minute I let it go.
I have a bunch of songs that I heard. Because the main thing, if you're picking singles, you got to pick songs that are hits, but also are hits for you. And that's that's how you get the big hits out of the park, and I hit 300s. When you pick singles that are like made for you, you think of songs like "Don't Close Your Eyes" by Keith Whitley, songs that like were like, just that's a singer was made for that song. John Party's song "Dirt in My Boots," I heard that song I think before he, you know, before he cut it.
And what did you think when you heard it?
Huge hit. This is a monster. This is a huge song. There's a line there about a tractor, you know. And I'm just like, I don't have that tractor factor, you know. I don't have that thing. It's not what I do. So I can either try to change this song up to make it work for me, or just let it go and hope those guys, you know, I want the songwriters to, I want them to find, for songwriters, man, they might get one or two great, now well, these guys, they probably get five great songs a year, right? I don't want to like stand in the way of someone's like baby and tie it up, because that's the way Nashville used to be. People would hold songs for like years, you know, hold 30, 40 songs to the record, and the hold was respected. Nowadays, as it should be, it's not. Like, you either cut it or you don't. And if you're taking your time, I'm going to pitch it to somebody else and get them to cut it. You know, songwriters have more power now, I think, than they did back in the late 90s. So that song, Whiskey Lullaby, is a song that came that I heard
song.
And I was like, and then.
Why not that one? What that?
It's just, I don't know. Just, you know, I didn't hear it as a duet the way Brad heard it, which is genius. It just wasn't. I don't know. I just didn't have it. Didn't do something for me. I don't know what it was. But that happens all the time. But for me, it's never. I never go, oh my gosh, I'm kicking myself. I'm always like, I'm happy for that song found the right home and made its way. There's always another song out there.
Who have you heard the opposite, where you got the song because somebody else was like, nah, and then man. You made it a hit, and they have to be.
Oh
like,
man, you know, "Summer on a Beach" was a big deal. It really was, man. That was like, I had that song on hold and. There's five guys that wrote that song, and there's a lot of people who wanted that song, and I just...
Who wanted it?
What's his name? The guy that wrote it. One of the writers in the song. I'm totally drawing a blank right now. My brain is... That's what happens when you're out on the road for 3 days straight. But actually, Michael Knox, I think Michael Knox wanted it for one of his artists, is what it was. And we kept saying, you know, our tour... Luckily, I don't have to fight those battles. One of my producers really... goes in the trenches for that stuff, and it worked out. It was a big hit for me, and it helps him go on the road and kind of have a song to talk about. But at the same time, I know it can be tough when you're a new artist, you know, a big song like that that's different and can kind of set you apart from other people. Hopefully they're happy. It was a big hit, you know.
It's like Lady A, you know, Lady Has You Look Good, their song.
Yeah.
And that was Thomas Rhett's first.
That's his song?
And it was, he didn't write it, he had it.
Okay.
And he was he was going to cut it.
Huge.
It's awesome. But every artist does different things with it too.
Yeah.
That's what we don't know too. Like,
yeah.
What are you going to do different about? Like, Kenny's totally was like this beach vibe. Who knows how Little Big Town would have cut it and tracked it and what they would have had as a part of the song.
It's totally. It's, yeah, I think all you can do, I mean, it's just the business we're in and life in general is you have to like, you cannot like hold like that. You got to be, have an attitude of gratitude and be thankful for what you got. And if something, it's all meant to be. There's a reason why you didn't cut that song. There's a reason why someone else cut that song. Otherwise, you're going to drive yourself crazy, and you're going to be resentful, and you're going to be you're playing a small game, and you should be playing a much bigger game where you're looking at a macro view of it, and not just this micro like song. If you're, you know, that's not going
to
work.
Are people trying to pitch you songs all the time? Not your people,
yeah,
and not people that are in your second tier, but like walking down the street people.
I get stuff. Yeah, I get stuff from. Obviously, it shows, and my email address. A lot of people have my email address. I get a lot of songs out there that I try to listen to them. And
but you do try to listen to them?
I'm pretty quick. I mean, I can go 7-8 seconds and know whether it's for me or not. It might be a great song, but it's not for me.
What about the legalities of it though? Because I have. Listen, I write dumb songs, right? I don't even write real songs.
Well, on the road, if someone like hands me a CD, I don't touch it. I goes to Tom or Jay or one of my guys and.
Because you have songwriter's insurance. Because if I have to have it, you have it crazy, right?
You know, I don't know if I have it or
not. You for sure. If my business manager makes me have it.
I'm going to find out. I know, like, talking to guys in the town that have it, and they say it's pretty amazing. But I'll find out right now if I have it. I don't think I do.
And maybe my business manager makes me have it because she knows I probably accidentally steal a song. Because I'm not good.
No.
She'd be like, okay.
That's funny.
You have to make sure. Yeah.
I'll find out right now.
I definitely have it. Let's see here. Let's run through a couple more real quick. This is not a single, but love the song. My favorite song's on the record. I don't want to be alive. I'll Be the Moon.
Oh, gosh, man.
Because Ryan's been in here.
I just saw Maren backstage at Thomas's show. I was like, ugh, I can't believe you and TR have a song out together. Because it kind of ruins the chance for this to be a single. But I text Ryan all the time. You know, I do have songwriting insurance. Yeah, there you go. Ryan and I, he and I keep up, and this is the best song I've been telling him for 2 years. Like, this song means it's one of the best songs I've ever heard. It's such a unique like take on it, and like, you know, I'm always looking for songs that are different and say it in a way you haven't heard before. The idea of like, I'll be the moon, man. That guy can be the sun. He can be in your life during the daytime, but I'll be there with you at night. And that's such a good idea. And she kills it. She sings that. Her part of there is so awesome. And I wish it was a single. Maybe. I don't know. But I don't think so.
When the record came out, I love that song so much. You and Mary came and sang it on. I was like, you guys have to come sing it on the show. Like, yeah. I love the show. I love the song so much.
She was like, I mean, she's blown up, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's relatively new at that point.
Ryan and I keep up.
Yeah.
I like that dude.
I do too.
He's a good dude.
I think we're going to see it at Stagecoach on Friday. He's going to be out there.
We're playing on Saturday.
I know, man. Are you coming in early?
Yeah, I am.
What are you gonna, are you working or just hanging?
We're playing on Saturday night.
But are you coming in on Friday?
We're just going to have to get there early because it's such a big thing.
You coming in Friday night?
Yeah, we're coming Friday. What time are you playing? We make it out
Friday 10:15.
So you're the big name on top of that thing.
My third time finally. It's not the top of the thing. That Stagecoach is a tough gig. The ideal gig is the one right before the last one, as it always is. 8 o'clock slot. Sun's still going down. They're still serving alcohol. People's buzzes are still kind of going up a little bit. They're in a good mood still. 10:15. You know they're like almost hungover at this point. You have to go out there and like just kill. You have to kick their ass.
You're one of the big names. Like, there are three big names.
I know.
It's Dirks, Shania, because that's who's our night, and then maybe
I think it's Kenny. Yeah, the first time I played there was with was Daylight and Taylor Swift went on before me. That says a lot. That was back in 2007, and I came back and opened for Miranda, and then this time we're finally headlining it. So
look at that.
Big deal. Big night, man. It's crazy. Stagecoach is one of the big
I'd never been before. It's fun, they asked us to play like 6 months ago.
It's fun.
And we were like, because we weren't going to play a bunch of idiots. I was just doing stand-up.
Yeah. No, it's.
And everybody was like, come do Stagecoach.
Yeah, it's fun. Well, hopefully you'll be in that night. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, we'll come out to the show. We're standing at a friend's house, close. So we're just going to be able to walk over there. Is that walkable? Like, can you walk Stagecoach?
Yeah, just run back and forth. It's so much going on. The backstage is great. There's so many different bands. I mean, that's what's great. You got guys like. Yeah, I mean, you have bluegrass bands playing. You got Jerry Lee Lewis is playing. You got country. They do a great job of really bringing like everybody in that's under the country umbrella. So
we're playing a lot of the Brian O'Connor festivals this year.
Yeah,
we're doing Route 91 and Faster Horses, and so
O'Connell's festivals are fun, man. Those in particular are great.
He takes a lot of pride.
He makes the backstage vibe great.
That's what he like. You can tell.
And for the fan experience too, you know. I mean, I love all the festivals. They're great, but having like festivals that aren't just the kind of same feeling. They kind of have this unique, like Route 91 has its own feel, and Faster Horses has its feel, and Watershed has its feel, and I'll go out with Brian in a golf cart and go drive around. People are tailgating. He'll show me where this is where we set this place up just to get ice, man. They can get ice anytime they want here, and sunblock. And this is a pond they can go fishing at. They can get fishing poles from right here and go fish in this pond. I mean, he really makes it unique. And hopefully, we're doing some of those together. I'm doing Faster Horses. Maybe I'm doing Watershed. I don't know.
Does it feel like you live two lives?
I do live two lives.
Because it's like the normal dude during the middle of the week and then the rock star on the weekends.
I'm literally, I've had a chance to do like some TV stuff and it would make for great TV, but I just don't want to have like cameras on me. But because of aviation I'm treating myself on who I am on the road is definitely who I am. My fans, I'm honest in front of them, and that's a big part of my personality when I get on stage and go crazy. But I am literally, you know, I'll be flying home, and the next morning, when my kids are younger, I'll be like in a mommy and me class with a twirly baton, you know, like doing like the things, but no one would possibly think that I was doing this, you know, like, because I mean, I'm all in on the dad thing. Like I, there's nothing beneath me, nothing I won't do. I won't do anything. And so it's definitely, I physically am two places at once too. I mean, I get very little sleep. I'm up every morning early because I want to have a full life here, and the only thing it takes a toll on is the sleep. But I really am physically sometimes in two places at the same time.
I want to end on this, and I wonder if it got.
I have
to
a question for you.
Okay, cool. Okay,
your book.
Let me hit first, and then I'll come up. You can ask whatever
Napa
you want.
Napa paying you?
For Napa.
I walk by your book every day. It was in my closet. There's a back picture of you with the Napa symbol.
This is a good question.
It drives me crazy all the time. I see. I go. Did he get painted on that Napa thing in the back cover?
Nothing. Zero.
That's the question I had. All right.
Zero. Napa buys a studio sponsorship.
I know, so it's in there.
And it's in there. And I wanted that book to be just random pictures.
Right.
And so, just like the book, it's all random stories.
Yeah.
And I just want, and Napa, we had to make the decision. Do we not choose the picture because there's a logo?
Yeah.
Or do it is a part of my life and a part of time? We were like, you know what? They just, I really like working with Napa because they're fantastic. But also, it was like, you know, this is Napa. Weirdly, they're a big part of my life because they allow me to eat. The sponsors of the show allow me to eat.
It's important.
We had to have a meeting to go on the picture of the book. There's a Napa logo. Do we cut it? Do we make it black?
So you did think about it.
Absolutely.
Okay, gotcha.
And it was just, I just tried in that book to, as much of my life as it really was.
It's very real.
Just let it be.
I just see that all the time. I was like, it's so funny. I wonder if you got paid.
That's so funny you asked that because we had a whole meeting about that. I was like, just let it be. And they got, no money extra. We don't think we ever even told them.
Yeah. They're happy.
We know. Yeah. Okay. Here's my question. So when the ACMs happened and you were hosting, I was back before I presented. It was crazy how calm and chill you were in between. We were just talking before I went on. And I was about to go on and do Album of the Year. And I was rooting for you. And I said publicly I wanted you to win Album of the Year. You didn't win, which sucked. But I wanted you to win. And so I opened. I looked at the card ahead of time.
Yeah.
And I saw that it was Miranda who won.
Yeah.
And I went over to Mary and told her. So as if she wanted to tell you so you wouldn't be like, did she tell you or did you just see it live?
I saw it live. I mean,
because I went over and gave her heads up.
You know, the award show stuff. I'm as competitive. I don't know anyone more competitive than me. I'm really, really competitive. But and there's times I've lived and died by the award shows, and I'm in a place now where I love being nominated. It's awesome. Winning would be nice, but I'm in it to win the much bigger battle.
I know, but it sucked for you. Like I wanted you to win.
I gotta be honest, man. I'm like, I'd like to win so I could thank people like you that you played songs and given them a chance to get things got going. I want to thank Mary. I want to thank my wife. But man, I want to beyond all that.
You're gonna do all that.
You get the trophy. That's great. But winning in life, you can't just win in when you have. I'm winning. I feel like I'm winning in life, man. I get to go do that, and that's great. And I didn't win Album of the Year, but when the show's over, I get to go back to like. I had this great band I get to play music with.
I agree. It's awesome. Family. Life's awesome.
No, life is awesome. That's my quote. That's my mantra right there.
Still,
life is awesome.
I'm just telling you, I was like...
Life is awesome.
I was sad you didn't win. And I was like, this is just boy looking out for boy. And I was like, Mary, if you want to tell him, I don't want him to like on TV like be like, oh.
If your album's out the same year Miranda's out, you're not going to get it. That's the way it goes. And it's certainly so. She makes great records. She's got a great voice. She's a great friend. And I'm happy for her.
And it was a double album. It was an art piece. It was a fantastic art piece. I'm just saying, I'm rooting for you. I looked. I wanted to see it. Then I went and told Mary, your manager. I was like, he didn't win. So if you want to tell him, just so it,
she's
it,
used to me not winning. My sister calls me the Susan Lucci of country music. So, hey, better be that than nothing else. But I'm so appreciative of every award show I've been nominated for. And I'm saying this in all honesty, but I would tell any younger artists out there, do not make that your goal. Do not look at Kenny. He never won anything till like. He was already playing stadiums. Luke doesn't win a whole lot of stuff. And he didn't start winning until he was already playing stadiums. Like, do not focus on winning a piece of hardware. It's so silly. And it's a lot of it's voted on. As you know, I'm not going to tell the listeners, you know, just enjoy your steak. You don't want to see how it's made. It's not a pretty process how that stuff gets voted on. It's really not. And it's not. The true judge of, like, what is good is your audience. When you go out there and you stand in front of that microphone and they – sing songs back to you. That's what any younger artist should be focused on. And that's what I focus on. There's times in the middle of my career where I didn't, and I got frustrated, but I don't care.
This article just popped up on my notifications. It's the best 100 choruses of all time, like hooks of songs.
Ross Copperman? He's his name?
No, it's not even country songs. Like, if I say Ashley Simpson, Pieces of Me, do you remember the chorus of that song?
No.
Yeah, me either.
Pieces of Me.
And I'm just looking through some of this list.
I mean, like, I can sing all, like, the Moana soundtrack. I have kids.
I bet you know all that stuff.
I know. All that, I mean, I can sing, yeah.
I want to get here and see the top of these real quick.
You're welcome. I can sing.
Here we go. All right, here we go. Top 10. You ready?
Ugh.
Miley Cyrus, Wrecking Ball. Everybody knows that. It came in like a wrecking ball. Don't hurt your voice.
Sorry.
Ride With Me. You know that one? If you want to come and take a ride with me. You know the Nelly song?
Nelly, yeah.
Florida Georgia Line. What are you about to say?
I would say Flow Rider.
Oh, Flow Rider. All right. All right. R. Kelly Ignition remix.
I don't know.
I'm not trying to be cool.
Didn't they have a song like Pee On Me or something?
He has a whole video.
Okay.
Yeah. He has a whole life
I'm
called
so
Pee On Me.
I mean, you don't understand. I'm like the wrong. I listen to like Flatt & Scruggs. I'm like I don't know anything about.
These are the biggest
90s
of all
country.
Time, they say. Katy Perry, Teenage Dream.
Yeah, I know a song. Give me a little piece.
Damn it. This is the top for me.
Dream.
That's it. Yeah, I wouldn't like. How about Empire State of Mind?
The Jay-Z stuff?
Yeah.
This whole thing's so good. Not the one about ambience, slip me an ambience.
In New York, concrete jungle, where dreams are made of. Okay. We're in the top five.
Something you can't.
Oh. This one you'll get, I bet. Jimmy Eat World, the middle. No. Oh, you don't get to. It just takes some time.
Don't you do that? Don't you do that in your show?
We part of it, yeah. We did parts of all kinds of crap.
I am like, I'm honestly, this is not.
Outcast, Miss Jackson.
No, I don't
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. Woo, I am for real. Never meant to make your mama. You know that one?
Oh my gosh! Oh, wow. No, I know Roseville, Kentucky, Bill Skinner Blues. I'm
the
terrible.
Killer, Mr. Brightside. Because I'm Mr. Brightside.
I love the Killers.
You do love the Killers?
I love the Killers.
Do you know
man.
Those guys?
No, but I saw them play when they played the great thing about living in Nashville is you see like everyone come through the Ryman, and I saw them play the Ryman. They're still on their way up. It was awesome, man.
Number two, Since You've Been Gone, Kelly Clarkson.
Since You've Been Gone.
Yeah. And number one is Carly Rae Jepsen, Call Me Maybe.
My son's favorite song. I know that whole song. My son Knox, who's three. Call Me Maybe. We listen to Call Me Maybe like
still
10 times in the car. We just got into it. Hey, Lord, I just met you. This is crazy, but here's my number. So call me maybe. And all the other boys try to chase me, but here's my number. So call me maybe. And I can, before you came into my life, I knew you so bad. You should know that. I mean, I know the whole thing, man. But it's embarrassing. My son loves that song. I think it must have. You know, it was in the movie Sing. That's the reason why I know. There's a TV show, a movie called Sing,
where it's like American Idol for cartoons.
Yeah, it's so good. And oh my gosh, Matthew McConaughey. Go back to your original thing about people you text and they'll text you back. Matthew McConaughey. So I did a thing for him called Matt Jack. And Mac, it's
in Austin. Yeah, it's Mac Brown, Matthew McConaughey.
Yes,
and
I'm so glad this happened because I can tell you the story.
Okay, go ahead.
So anyway, and he it was really hard. I couldn't do it as the schedule wasn't working out. Well, all three of them like called me and texted me one day, and Matthew McConaughey like called me like, whoa, McConaughey just called me. This is crazy. He's texting me. I decided to do it. We text a little bit leading up to it. Well, then afterwards, I hadn't I watched the movie Sing. And he was the voice of one of the main characters. And I was like, how should I put this? Bravo on Sing. So good. Bravo. I wrote Bravo. What an idiot. Bravo. I don't think it's even on this phone. It's a new phone. And like just, nothing came back on that one. And,
oh, wow. No, nothing.
No, I haven't heard from that one. I think I used my one chance up with McConaughey and just nothing.
I've done that before,
he's not texting back a stupid country singer.
All right, there we go.
It's already over?
It's over. Dude, we talked for an hour and
so good,
hour and 20
man.
Minutes. Time just flies by.
It was really fun, man.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate you coming
love
by.
Love the show. Congrats.
Thanks.
This is a good thing.
People listen to these for weeks and months away. So right now, Black's a single. These podcasts are definitely not time sensitive, which is the crazy thing about it. So
I can do it again.
But
I can talk lifestyle. Let's talk about food and nutrition.
We can talk about whatever you want. That's a good thing about these. Dirk's like, I want to do a podcast. I'm like,
I want to talk about, life hacking and how we can keep.
He brought me
growing.
A book. Yeah, the tool, and I haven't read the Tim Ferriss book. And it's like it looks
Tools
like
Titans.
If you were to stack three Bibles on top of each other,
it's about
that
the routines of grinders like yourself, man. I'll put a little note in there for you.
You did put a note in there.
Yes,
appreciate it.
Keep
all right, episode me. What's that? Episode 54. Dirk's good to see you.
See you, bud.
And I'll probably see you in a couple of days. I'll see you Friday night.
Yeah,
I'm gonna come out.
All right, come on.
I think I've been to your shows more than anybody else's. Like. Really, I've been to more of your shows than anybody in town, period.
Well, yeah. It starts all the way back in D.C., I think. It's the first big one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I came out. Came out. But I think I've been to, like, seven of your shows. Yeah. I haven't been to anybody
else. You came to the biggest one, Nashville, which I appreciate, man. That was a big night.
That was a big night. That was a great. That was like, everybody was like, okay, that was your moment into that. You're now in the eight. Wherever you want to say it is, that was your night. You kind of jumped 89. Up.
89% time.
All right, whatever you want to say. All right, Dirk Bentley, thank you, and thanks to Blue Apron, 100 Flowers, and we'll see you guys next time.